From Clearfield to Beaver Falls, Williamsport to Uniontown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Tom Wolf has vetoed a bill that would have given businesses in Pennsylvania broad liability protections so they could reopen in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. Elizabeth Stell of the Commonwealth Foundation is here with details. 2020 has indeed been an unprecedented year in many ways, but we also grappled with some old problems. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi take a look back on this week's Allegheny Institute report. And Congress is considering another pandemic relief bill. On this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary, Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania explains lawmakers should not bail out state and local governments for bad spending decisions. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Elizabeth Stell of the Commonwealth Foundation in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Pennsylvania General Assembly has wrapped up business for the 2019-2020 legislative session. As required by the state constitution, the old term of the legislature ended on November 30th, but the next session, which will include those elected in the recent general election, won't begin until lawmakers are sworn into office the first Tuesday of January. Thus, the state enters a unique period of about 1 month when a legislative session cannot be held. Fear not, however, legislative leaders and those who will be continuing in office will keep the lights on. Governor Wolf has vetoed yet another bill designed to help small businesses survive and recover from his harsh shutdown policies during the COVID-19 pandemic. State Representative Barbara Gleim of Cumberland County sponsored a measure that would have provided a lifeline to family farmers by providing no-fault limited liability protections for farmers offering agritourism events when they open their land to the public for a fee. Such events, like corn mazes at Halloween, often provide a vital additional income stream for farmers. Wolf vetoed the measure, leaving those farms at risk for frivolous lawsuits. The city of Philadelphia continues to hammer businesses with strict lockdown policies and is doing so without providing any metrics for when those businesses can reopen. Broad and Liberty attempted to get definitive answers from Mayor Jim Kenney's office as to what benchmarks had to be reached before businesses could reopen their doors. But the city's health department refused to share specific details. The city of Philadelphia has instituted some of the most draconian shutdown orders in the state in an effort to curb the surge in COVID-19 cases, but they refused to offer any scientific basis for those orders. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. It has been a busy couple of weeks under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg as lawmakers pass the remainder of the 2020-2021 state budget. But in so doing, they kick the can down the road on some serious budgetary problems. The legislature did pass critical liability protections for businesses, only to see the measures vetoed by Governor Tom Wolf. We're going to discuss all of this with Elizabeth Stell, who is Director of Policy Analysis at the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. Elizabeth, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Elizabeth, before we get into some of the analysis of the state budget, one of the pieces of legislation that passed the General Assembly here before the holiday was a blanket liability protection for businesses attempting to reopen in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. The governor has vetoed it. Could you tell us a bit about what was included in that bill and why it was so important for businesses trying to recover from COVID-19?
The liability bill that was just vetoed, House Bill 1737, provided broad protections for businesses, nonprofits, healthcare providers, makers of protective equipment against frivolous lawsuits. Many businesses are concerned that even if they are allowed to open, they open themselves up to litigation if a patron would come down with coronavirus. And there was wide consensus that this was a good thing to do. And unlike some of the governor's other proposals to help businesses through this very difficult time, it wasn't going to cost the Commonwealth any additional taxpayer funds. Unfortunately, he vetoed that, and it was incredibly disappointing. I mean, this is something that people have been asking for months. I mean, we've been talking about it since the spring, that we should be doing this immediately. And the justification from the governor was that he already provided some limited protection for businesses. But when you dig into the details, it appears that this protection doesn't even apply to COVID exposure. So if someone were to be exposed at a business, there's still some level of liability. And that's a huge concern. So very disappointing was one of the few parts of the budget agreement that we thought was actually good. So there's a lot of work left to be done when lawmakers come back in January.
In terms of the budget itself, we all knew going into this that we had essentially about a $5 billion plus hole in the budget. And that hole got filled in some relatively creative ways, one of which was the use of CARES Act funding. First of all, was it even appropriate or legal, Elizabeth, to use CARES Act funding to plug a general hole in a state budget?
Certainly not appropriate. Is it legal? That question is still up in the air. I like to say that we bailed out bureaucrats instead of helping Pennsylvanians. And what I mean by that is we took the $1.3 billion that we had left, and instead of using it to help businesses that have been shuttered or kids who are struggling with virtual learning or the unemployed, we just plugged in the holes in our budget. And that leaves a lot to be desired. It not only doesn't help the people that are struggling with COVID, which was the reason that we got that money, but it also creates a huge budget hole for next June. So that we're going to be under immense pressure for tax hikes if they want to keep spending at the same levels. I'd point out that North Carolina just stopped a broadband program that they were going to fund with CARES money because they couldn't get all of it spent before the end of the year. So there's a lot of questions about if the money isn't all spent, are the feds going to take it back? Are they going to see through the shell game he played with moving funds around and say, nope, you use these funds to replace lost revenues? You have to give it back. I mean, we open ourselves up to all kinds of headaches heading into the new year.
This is a case of deja vu here in Pennsylvania. Back when Ed Rendell was governor, Elizabeth, I believe 2009, there was the federal stimulus program under the Obama administration, and Rendell used that one-time money to plug a budget hole, which then created a budget problem for his successor, Governor Tom Corbett, who got blamed for, among other things, allegedly cutting education spending, which he actually didn't do. A whole other topic there. Are we now repeating a past mistake, and is this going to really create a problem when we get to the budget crunch in June of 2021?
You know what? That's incredibly insightful. We're falling into that same trap. People are going to say, opponents are going to say, look, you want to now cut all the spending because you have this huge gap, and Republicans are going to get accused of cutting education or cutting whatever it is that we have to do to balance our budget. So, yes, it's history repeating itself.
We are talking with Elizabeth Stell, who is Director of Policy Analysis at the Commonwealth Foundation, and we're parsing through the Pennsylvania state budget, the balance of which was passed here before the legislature adjourned for the session, for the year, a couple of days ago. One of the things that was not included in this budget, and it is an issue that is facing many families across our Commonwealth, Elizabeth, is additional funding for families and students, many of whom are now stuck at home. Why was there no money there to help families address educational needs? Because this is clearly a COVID-related problem for many families.
We were looking at just a portion of that CARES money going to parents so that they could hire that tutor or get that computer or whatever materials or support that their child needed to continue to learn, that they could get those things. And that did not make it into the final budget, which to us was incredibly disappointing because we could make so much of a difference by just giving, you know, $200, $500 to a family to help them deal with this new challenge. of virtual learning. And, you know, we had pointed out hospitals got CARES money, school districts got CARES money, small businesses through the PPP program got CARES money, but parents struggling with working and homeschooling their kids, essentially, nothing.
Governor Tom Wolf, of course, has not paid much attention to the General Assembly on anything over the past year, especially over the past year, but for many years. One of the areas that the governor routinely ignores the will of the General Assembly, Elizabeth, is when it comes to this budget and the fact that he frequently massively overspends it. Was there any effort to curtail his ability to do that again?
So this year's budget doesn't create any new limits on how much the governor can spend or rather prevent his overspending. We've seen a very concerning trend over the past few years of Governor Wolf spending more than the legislature gives him permission to spend and then coming back at the end of the year and basically asking for forgiveness versus permission. And they just throw that overspending into the next year. So that does two things. One, it incentivizes the governor to keep overspending. And two, it really hides that overspending from the taxpayer. So they can play a lot of games when they tell you how much they actually increase spending from year to year.
The governor is also attempting to work his will on the regional greenhouse gas initiative. And this is supposedly to cap greenhouse gas emissions through a series of punitive regulations and what are in essence taxes. The General Assembly says it should have a role in that. The governor says they shouldn't. Are we headed for a showdown?
Yeah, this is, look, REGGIE's, what people call it as abbreviation. It's a carbon tax. And in Pennsylvania, that's a big deal because not only does that mean more expensive energy for you and I, but that means more expensive energy for the entire Eastern Seaboard because Pennsylvania is an exporter of electricity, a large exporter of electricity. So I don't think the legislature is going to stop fighting this. What they do next remains to be seen. Right now, it's a comment period. So if this is an issue that matters to you and you want to explain why you're concerned about a carbon tax, you know, you can go on to it's called the IRRC website and submit your comment. The more comments, the better. The critical thing is going to be, can they get this regulation done before the end of the Wolf administration?
Again, we have been talking with Elizabeth Stell, who is the Director of Policy Analysis at the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. Elizabeth, tell us a little bit about Commonwealth, and you have a whole wealth, pardon the pun, of information there online for folks on all of these issues. Where can they go to find that?
Yeah, people can go to commonwealthfoundation.org and see all of the research that we're doing. They can find us on Twitter at Liberty4PA. They can find us on Facebook at Commonwealth Foundation.
Elizabeth Stell of the Commonwealth Foundation. Elizabeth, thank you again for being here.
Thank you.
This certainly has been an eventful year with public policy challenges, both new and old. Frank Amrad and Eric Montardi from the Allegheny Institute take a look back at 2020.
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Institute, Frank Gamrat. Frank, let's put a bow on 2020 if we can.
Can we choose what that bow is made out of? A
lot of interesting stuff this year. Obviously, where we focus, looking at the economic and fiscal characteristics of government here in southwestern Pennsylvania and across the state and how that affects southwestern Pennsylvania. I mean, so much of what we did this year was focused on how the virus affecting economic activity, what that meant translating over to government and their finances, and what could possibly happen, what did happen. And obviously, there's a lot of different points in time here because you had governments that were already into their budget years. You had governments that had to start a budget year, like right after the shutdown was lifted in, you know, many of the counties here in this part of the state. And now we're into the next round where you have governments that are going to be starting thinking about what they're going to do for 2021, what that means. So let's start with one of the topic areas that you worked on a good bit this year, and that's gaming and casinos. Obviously, that was something that was, you know, completely shut down. You couldn't go and gamble. But you also wrote at the beginning of the year that the state had just approved electronic and online gaming. Yep, so, yeah, give our listeners an idea of where things stand now.
Well, yeah, I mean, like you said, it's been an interesting year for everybody, a trying year for everybody. And
and our research agenda took a turn with it. And when you look at gaming, one of the things that, again, in the vein that you mentioned, government revenues. When slots were approved way back in 2007, they were done so under the guise of property tax reduction, that tax revenue be taxed at 54%, of which 30-some percent would go straight to property tax relief. The rest would go to a bunch of other things. But it was the property tax relief that really set the tone and enabled those slots to be approved. Now, here we are, 2020, moving along, property tax revenue is coming along, and all of a sudden, boom, half a month of March is lost. April and May were both lost. Half of June was lost. And of course, you have big holes in gaming and the gaming revenue that goes off to the governments. And so we needed to look at this. Okay, how does this impact government structure, government revenues, and whether it's property taxes? Now, when they added table games, they added it to the general fund. And in one of our earlier briefs from August, we estimated about $500 to $600 million in total tax revenues had been lost just from slots in gaming. Now, like you mentioned, they added some more. Government has an insatiable appetite for tax revenue. And so adding more forms of gaming allowed them to take more money for the general fund. And so you had internet gaming, slots and table internet games. You had the sports wagering, you had fantasy contests, and you had something called video terminals. And those were slot machines set up at trucking stops. And so, to no one's surprise, internet gaming took off. Oh, my heavens. It was in February just $19 million. It went up to $25 million in March, $43, $55 million in by May. And it's been hovering in the 50s ever since, $50-some million, you know, just in total revenues. And so that kind of plugged a little bit of the hole. Now, sports wagering was in the doldrums because obviously sporting world was set back a little bit. It picked up in August and a little bit in September, but not much again until October. So anyway, long story short, that the total revenues had been down from March through July, really. And then they started to tick back up August and September. And you know, in October, we actually were 13% above last year's total. In September, it was just a 1.5%. And a lot of it had to do with these new avenues of gaming that have really stepped in. But it doesn't go into the property tax relief fund. As internet gaming, sports wagering goes to the general fund. So when school districts go to set their millages and look at their budgets for the upcoming year, there's going to be a hole where property tax relief from gaming revenues used to be.
Not so much relief, but just stability. And I know one of the things you pointed out earlier this year was all the time we talk about getting rid of property taxes, moving on to something else, sales or income-based taxes. Mm-hmm. That was really a stable source of revenue. I mean, here locally, Allegheny County pushed back its tax collection deadline. This point, they've basically collected really what they almost collected last year. Where the county's kind of taking a hit is on, they tax alcoholic beverages, they tax car rentals, they get a share of money from the Rivers Casino. Looking at where they are, the most recently reported numbers were October, they're about 16% off on total revenues, and that's taxes and non-taxes alike. But property taxes really for the county, for the city of Pittsburgh, for most of the school districts in Allegheny County, pretty much they either hit where they budgeted or were not far off. And even like with the school districts, because again, as I pointed out at the top, that they're the group that had the budget in the summertime and had to have things ready for July 1st. There were, we did a sample of districts back over the summer. We looked at maybe like 26 of the districts in Allegheny County, about 9 of them that did not increase their property tax rates. They still expected that they were going to collect more money from the property taxes next year, now into the budget year that we're in. Where they thought that they were going to take their hit was like on earned income taxes, also known as wage taxes.
Right. And of course, you're going to see that, as this moves on, wage taxes, because the incomes from 2020 are going to be severely curtailed, but that's not going to show up till tax collections for 2021. This year they were not too bad because of it was on 2019's collections. But governments are going to be stranded and struck hard for cash for a lot of reasons. Another thing we're looking at, of course, is turnpike. The usage of the turnpike is down. Revenues are down. We did one piece earlier that estimated that they were down certainly a couple million dollars just in toll revenues. Recently, they just borrowed $550 million to pay their obligation to PennDOT, which is $450 million a year, thanks to legislation that stretches way back to the Rendell administration. And so that puts the Turnpike well over $13 billion in debt. And of course, if you travel the Turnpike, you're going to get another toll increase January 1st, because that's how they try to pay for this this borrowing, is through toll increases. But now you had usage of the Turnpike falling, especially on the passenger side, slowly, very, very slowly trying to return back to normal. Now, we only have data through October, but it's looking like they're going to have a hard time moving forward as well.
The Turnpike, the way it used to be, was you paid the tolls because that was there to maintain the Turnpike itself. But then with Act 44, it became, well, it's a financing vehicle now.
Right.
And that's the way it's been. It's supposed to slow down, I guess, in this decade here if the plans go through. But again, here's what you think of, like the Port Authority, because that's the mass transit agency here. They get that share of the money from the Turnpike, that which it paid over to PennDOT. They're also looking at significant declines in ridership. Fare revenues are off. You know, they're now 4 months into their fiscal year, and they're down about 15% on what they call operating income, which would be mostly fare revenues, advertising, but then also like the subsidies that they get from the county, the state. So that money's down. Frank, is there anything else that we want to talk about before we wrap things up here?
Well, just to let everyone know that we're going to stay on it. We're going to keep watching what these folks do, and plenty more will be coming out in our policy briefs, which you can get on our website at AlleghenyInstitute.org.
On behalf of Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi. We want to wish all of our listeners the happiest of holidays, all the best in 2021. And this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Some state and local governments are looking to Congress to help bail them out of past overspending by providing funding in a possible new COVID-19 relief package. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania talks about it on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Americans for Prosperity recently urged the United States Senate to reject any wasteful COVID spending in the form of lame duck bad deals. Americans for Prosperity Chief Government Affairs Officer Brent Gardner said a bad deal before the election is a bad deal after the election. Congress continues to focus on the wrong things. Real COVID relief should focus on addressing the actual problem, addressing the spread of the virus. We can start with smarter testing, vaccine deployment, and therapeutics, not additional bailouts to state and local governments for reckless spending that long predated the crisis. Attempts to tie stimulus spending to the government funding forces members to choose between a bad spending bill or shutting down the federal government, and that shows utter disrespect to the taxpayer and underscores Washington's failure to fulfill its core appropriations duties. Well, just as AFP is opposing any federal bad deal, we similarly urge the House and Senate in Harrisburg to put taxpayers first in the budget negotiations that took place just a couple of weeks ago. In recent commentary, we talked about the oddity of Pennsylvania's state budget situation and the potential for mischief, given that the governor and the General Assembly would be negotiating a finalized spending plan during the sine-die session, or the time immediately prior to the close of the two-year legislative session, that has been a venue for last-minute backroom deals in prior years. Instead, the leadership in the House and in the Senate worked out a deal, largely behind closed doors, to use the state's remaining Federal CARES Act funds, as well as transfers from special funds to the general fund, $100 million from the state's rainy day fund, and an improved revenue outlook to patch the remaining hole in last year's budget and finish funding this year's spending plan. Legislative leaders and the governor say that the $35.5 billion budget actually reduces spending by 2.2% over last year's figure. but some rank-and-file legislators dispute that assertion, saying that a change in the timing of certain payments is the reason for the so-called spending reduction. But regardless of the final figures, one thing is for certain. While the General Assembly and the governor have labored over the gap in the current budget, they're about to confront the same problem again in just over 2 months when the debate begins over the 2021-22 spending plan. And this time, there are no quick fixes in sight. PA's fiscal problem remains the same. Its elected officials have taxed and spent far in excess of our rate of growth, and those irresponsible policies undertaken under both parties' leadership have created the mess we face today. Real reforms are needed, such as cutting wasteful, ineffective corporate welfare spending and reforming our tax code to promote growth and investment. Well, an exceptional place to start would be for the legislature to take up and pass the Taxpayer Protection Act upon their return to Harrisburg in January. This vitally important legislation would provide an amendment to the Constitution providing for spending limits, tying spending both to population growth and the rate of inflation. This critical check on spending is what Pennsylvanians deserve after this most recent budget. In a year when so many had to make tough decisions about their family's spending, it seems Harrisburg was spared. All eyes will be on leaders as the next year's fiscal budget negotiations commence. Another federal stimulus is not what Harrisburg needs, and not what hardworking Pennsylvanians demand. Rather, folks want a budget process that is constrained by the realities of the day, be that COVID or externalities yet to be determined. You can find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years now, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WPHB-AM in Phillipsburg, WJAS-AM in Pittsburgh, along with WHKS-FM in Port Allegheny, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.
Thank you.